You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, how are you doing, young lady? Been a long day at work today, and we find ourselves in the offices as the sun sets.
Yep, and it's been one of those kind of not so great work days. Everything that could go wrong does go wrong, but at least it's over. I've got my chocolate shake. I've got you a lemonade.
I know. Thank you. A pink lemonade. And I just wanted to have another conversation.
Yeah, you know what? Today seemed to me to be the day of bad, not people, but bad stuff in the news as far as bad behavior is what I'll say. People with bad behavior was today's mantra for me.
Well, you know what? We can continue that conversation on bad behavior, and I have something I want to discuss with you.
Okay, let's do it.
You know, this past week, I was invited by the California Chancellor's Office for the state university system to come in and give a seminar on the proactive enforcement of subversive groups. And I was talking about Antifa and Black Lives Matter, the alt-right, Occupy, pretty much everybody. And here we go. Right after I finished that seminar during the same week, there is a news article about Antifa showing up armed with weapons in Portland, Oregon, for a future freedom march that is going to be conducted downtown by Joey Gibson, who is actually a candidate for United States Senate. I guess he's running for the Senate up there, who's been associated with Patriot Prayer. And, of course, Antifa and Patriot Prayer and Mr. Gibson have clashed before. And what really bothers me about this, and this is what I discussed in my seminar with the chancellor's representatives and all these chiefs of police from all our universities in California, was you can't let this happen. You have got to be able to balance free speech and the freedom of assembly against people that are destructive and violent and want to hurt people and want to vandalize university and city property. But what really bothers me more about this, Linda, is all the BS that is presented by the mainstream media as real news. When I investigate it, it's totally false and, in fact, malicious news.
And you know that that's one of my biggest peeves, and we talk about it all the time, that this whole fake news issue with people misreporting and reporting things to make you think something other than what is the truth is just absolutely wrong.
Well, you know, so me, the investigator, I don't recognize Mr. Gibson. Okay, I don't know him from Adam. But when I saw a story where his name was mentioned in Patriot Prayer, and I knew a little bit about Patriot Prayer, and I did not find that organization to be a white supremacist or an alt-right organization, and when I gave my seminar, I certainly discussed that. And so I wanted to go in a little bit deeper because now I know the founding member from the news media reports. And when I start my investigation and I go to places like Wikipedia and these different news organizations and newspapers that describe Mr. Gibson as being a white supremacist or a member of the alt-right, I couldn't find any forensic evidence to support that whatsoever. In fact, I watched a video of Mr. Gibson at a rally where I won't use the expletive, but it begins with an F, and he said, F white supremacists and F neo-Nazis. And he says, all we're trying to do is have our free speech, and we are absolutely against people like Antifa that are against people that express free ideas and want to hurt them with violence and weapons. And I saw in the video where he was had his hands up. He didn't do anything. He didn't posture. He didn't say anything racial. As a matter of fact, he didn't say anything at all.
Well, they attacked him.
And they attacked him. They beat him with sticks. They kicked him, and they sprayed him with pepper spray. And what really bothered me about that is the police stood by and did absolutely nothing.
Well, that's a problem. I mean, and the police departments are getting sued for those types of activities lately, right?
We just have
a lawsuit right now.
In my old department with the city of San Jose and the San Jose Police Department, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the most liberal one in the state of California, ruled against the lower court on a motion for summary judgment that was appealed and said, no, the city, I believe that the city of San Jose and the police department has a community caretaking obligation to protect people. And this were people, the plaintiffs in this case that filed against the city in federal court were Trump protesters. And you remember that in San Jose, they had a pro-Trump rally and those people were absolutely beaten. They were assaulted, especially a woman that I remember. Set upon by an angry mob crowd of Antifa members and all sorts of, you know, anarchists, and the police were told to stand down
and do nothing. And they're told to stand down because they had a police chief or a commissioner or whoever that person was
at the time.
Right. That who let their politics, their personal politics, get in the way of their job and protecting the American people.
Right.
And that is why they should pay the price for that.
And absolutely. And just so that we're clear, the Ninth Circuit Court didn't grant any money. They don't do that. They don't. What they do is they make a decision of whether a case has triable facts to move on.
Yes.
And so we can go to a court of law. And I'll tell you what, those police chiefs and police officers and city officials that may happen to be a part of our conversation, they need to take heed of something like that, because this is getting far worse than it is better. And I just wanted to add that to your discussion about bad behavior.
Well, and you were talking about this event coming up in Oregon, correct?
Right, and it's going to be a violent event unless the officials in the city of Oregon get squared away with their police department and do some proactive enforcement.
Well, so I'd like to kind of go with you on that subject of Oregon, because there is a guy running for Congress in Oregon as an independent, and his name is Mark Roberts. And this guy, talk about bad behavior, Ron, has put out things on Twitter regards Melania Trump. And he puts out things like, did you know the First Lady works by the hour? Hashtag think dirty. Hashtag hoe bag. That's what he puts out about our First Lady. This is a person that is running for Congress.
You know, there is so much bad behavior to go around with our national politicians. It's absolutely disgusting. This is not what mainstream America wants in their political advocates. I don't care what side you're on.
No, and when I see this, this is where I just want to say to everybody that I know, please be careful who you vote for, because you may or may not like Donald Trump or Melania Trump, but a person with this type of character is not who we need in Congress, and this person should absolutely be, you know, hounded out of the race. He should be shunned, and nobody should vote for him, because what you're going to get in Congress then is more of the same garbage and more of the same swamp dwellers that we currently have.
You know, this country needs to move forward. We've talked about this a lot. I want to talk about it more tonight. But the people that are voters, they have got to stop being ignorant, and they have got to become more engaged with these politicians and vetting these politicians, honey, because they got to remember that if you elect this politician, or you sit on your hands and you don't go to vote and you allow that politician to be elected into office, that is the person, whether or not you like it, is representing you and your tax dollars and your the way that you live.
Exactly. And we do have to become more educated on who we're voting for. And we can't just go straight down party lines. Or you can't vote for somebody like this because you happen to like a tweet like that because you don't like the Trumps. You really have to think about the type of character of the people that are going to be representing us. And this is how we got into this mess right now, because it's so pervasive anymore. And you see that the entire Senate and Congress right now are absolutely landlocked in a standstill, that they can't get anything accomplished whatsoever, and all they can do is talk about each other. And this, the American people don't want this. We don't like it. We want things to move forward and get done. This is why we put them there. And the frustration level of the American people is huge, and they really don't appreciate how huge our frustration level is.
I think that's because, and you and I, you know, visit Washington, D.C. because of the work that I do, and you even do some separate work in Washington, D.C. We see the people that are the politicians that live in this isolated, protected bubble, and they get so caught up in party politics and identity politics that they forget about the voters. The people that are actually representing, they are out doing their own things, and I don't care what side it is. It's all about power, and it's never about the American people. For instance, honey, look at this thing that's been going on for weeks now about this controversy with ICE and pulling people apart and families apart and all of this. This is not the fault of ICE. This is not the fault of our Immigration and Naturalization Service. This is not the fault of the Department of Homeland Security. This is the fault of Congress on both sides for not removing these loopholes that allow people to come illegally into this country and to stay here forever and to violate our laws. And all of this is caused by Congress. And then they're such cowards that they turn around and they blame President Trump, or they blame DHS, or they blame ICE. This is the problem of Congress. And the ICE people and DHS have repeatedly gone to the Congress, and they have begged that Congress to work on this legislation and remove these loopholes, and they refuse to do it.
Well, because it's easier just to blame somebody, and this way you have a public that is uneducated thinking that it's Trump's fault. We just had the congresswoman from Hawaii?
Exactly.
Who did not even know what our laws were on immigration in the country, and she thought that President Trump made the law and that it was a bad law, but once they explained to her exactly, you know, what the law was, she had this dumbfounded look on her face, and she said, oh, well, I need to, you know, check this out.
And that's how ignorant they are, and that's how lazy they are, because they will not even educate themselves on the history of the immigration situation, on these laws and the legislation, and even what is going on in Congress. And this is a person that is a member of Congress. There is absolutely no excuse. For my part, I don't know about you, I don't think it should be a misdemeanor crime. I think if you sneak into the country illegally, it should be a felony.
Oh, I agree with you there. I absolutely agree with you. But it also should be a felony that our people in Congress don't even know the laws that they're there to protect.
Well,
for
they
us.
Shouldn't even be in Congress,
yeah,
if they don't understand the history, the context, and the legislation. And that's why Congress refuses to work things out between the two parties. And by the way, I call them the Republicrats. It's both sides that are guilty of this.
It's both sides. Then you have the New York Attorney General, who comes out and says that if she gets elected, or if she gets elected, she is going to try to prosecute ICE for crimes committed against people. These people, again, they don't know what they're talking about. They're taking us down a dangerous, dangerous road. And this goes to my bad behavior day, Ron, because there's so much bad behavior. Here's a Democratic Party official in Tennessee, the communications official, who calls all the Trump voters idiots. He says a whole lot of curse words at President Trump and calls him a moron, and he calls all of us idiots. This is not the kind of guy that we want in any type of communications job. What is it that he takes 50% of the population, just like Hillary did, and completely dismisses us as irrelevant idiots?
Well, I think the theme that constantly arises here, and we've talked about this before during coffee, is that they put their own politics and their own value systems ahead of their position and why these people are in office to help us. None of that rhetoric helps anybody. And what an oxymoron that this guy is a communications official and he uses that rhetoric in the way he does.
Well, and his name is Mark Brown, just so that you know, so that you can remember the name. And, you know, I mean, the Republican Party is supporting Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee.
Is he, and he's running for office? Is that the deal, or what?
Well, he's a communications expert. I don't know that he's running for office. But anyway, we need to just get rid of these people with this type of vitriol that they are talking about the American people. Okay, and more bad behavior. The New York Times hired a writer, Sarah Jong, after racist tweets that she has made. What's interesting about this is they had hired a more of a conservative writer who made a comment about the white supremacist type people
alt-right.
At one point, and she got fired immediately. But this gal that they've hired, they're standing behind her. And here are some of her tweets, Ron. Her whole thing is she hates white people. And her tweets, "Oh man, it's kind of sick how much joy I get out of being cruel to old white men." Another tweet, "I was equating Trump to Hitler before it was cool." Another tweet, "I open my mouth to politely greet a Republican, but nothing but an unending cascade of vomit flows from my face." And another tweet, hashtag cancel white people. And another one, "White people have stopped breeding. You'll all go extinct soon. This was my plan all along."
You know, that kind of rhetoric that is posted publicly from a person that purports to be a journalist, that people would read her articles, is absolutely despicable behavior. It's not just bad behavior. It's racist and it's despicable behavior.
And the New York Times is standing by her to be their new star writer. And I am so disgusted with this, I can't even tell you that she's going to be a tech writer, and they say she's extremely talented. Well, I could care less what talent she has, because she has erased any type of credibility she will ever have with me. Not that I ever read the New York Times anyway, but how dare they hire somebody like this? And their double standard is absolutely just astounding.
And you know, this is where the media and journalism is going. I see it going in retrograde. I don't see journalism and investigative journalism and writing for a newspaper moving forward to more enhanced professionalism. I see this type of reporting and reporter is endemic throughout the mainstream media. And I think that is something that we're going to have to deal with. But after a fill-up of lemonade, and what are you drinking over there?
Well, I'm not filling this up. It's a chocolate shake.
Oh, no, that'll be a little thick.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Thank you so much for joining us Monday through Friday evenings for our engaging and lively coffee conversation.
But now there's more. We would love for you to join us on Facebook at Talking While Married, where we post the pictures of the things that we talk about.
That's right. We'd love to have you both follow us and friend us on Facebook, Talking While Married.
We'll see you there, and thanks for joining us for coffee.
Well, I'm looking out the window of our offices at a beautiful, albeit hazy, red blazing sun going down.
Well, we've got an awful lot of smoke in the air here in California with all the fires, and even though most of them are in Northern California, it really kind of floats on down, and we get the effects.
Well, you know, unfortunately, the beautiful sunset is created by a lot of hydrocarbons in the air.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we have spoken quite a few times now about the darling of the progressive left democratic socialist movement.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
But, you know, here she is talking about how great the socialist model is, and I found it more than just a little ironic to actually listen to the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro tell members of his ruling Congress this week that the production models that they've tried so hard to attain in Venezuela have completely failed, and the responsibility is theirs.
So the production models for socialism, right?
That's exactly right. Now, you know, he doesn't want to accept full responsibility.
Oh, of course not.
You know, he puts a little bit of this responsibility onto the United States.
Of course.
Because of our, what he says, economic sanctions and, of course, our intimidating military presence. I don't think we have any military presence in or around the country of Venezuela. I think if there's any United States presence, it's in the ABC islands, right off of Venezuela, where we have a lot of tourists. But here's what he said, though. Then he gets pressured on that, and he backtracks that, or he walks it back, and he says, however, he's no longer going to blame the United States for his nation's woes. Well, you know, there was a 2017 study done on the Venezuelan economy, and they found that 93% of Venezuelan citizens don't even have enough money to buy food.
Well, no, they're in dire straits there. They don't have enough money to buy food or any of the necessities of life, and people are fleeing that country as best they can. So it's been quite an experimental failure in socialism. And what do you expect? Because there is no socialist country on the face of this planet that is a successful, thriving country.
But Ocasio-Cortez will never mention that, and none of the media will mention that. And I think we were talking about this last week, and I think you mentioned the fact that the inflation level for the Venezuelan monetary system was what?
I think they said 1,000,000%, if I remember.
1,000,000%.
Yeah.
And it has been going up about 27,000% per month.
Wow.
I mean, I can't even fathom that.
Yeah.
But you know what? In contrast to those people that say America was never great, well, I'll tell you what, we are getting greater and greater. And our United States economy, with our recent economic surveys and studies, now show that 72% of manufacturers in the United States are actually increasing workers' wages, which have gone up almost 3% most recently. And 72% of those manufacturers are, in fact, hiring more workers.
Well, absolutely. The economy right now is in really, really good shape, and that would be testified to by the numbers that we just had in the report of over 4%.
Over 4.1% increase in our GDP over the second quarter, and I think that's fantastic. So let me put it in perspective, sweetheart. In the last 16 months under President Trump, our economy has gone from a situation when President Obama was there of workers unable to find good-paying jobs to completely the opposite, to one where we can't even find enough workers to fill good-paying jobs.
Well, and what we need to do is we need to train people to do the work, because it's not that there's not enough people. There's not enough people that are trained in the jobs that they need to have done. And there's a couple of reasons for that. My favorite reason is because our schools don't educate you to a job. In other words, if you are in school and you are there to take accounting, when you get out of school, I have interviewed numerous people, Ron, when I'm looking for somebody for accounting, and they literally don't even know how to do an Excel spreadsheet. You can't just teach people theory. You have to teach people things to do, how to actually do a job, and they don't do that in our schools anymore. So that's one reason.
Well, you know, let me piggyback on that, all right, as an old high school teacher and as a university professor. And what I found when I went to high school, and I think you and I talked about this, is we were really heavy on the trades. So we had workshop, we had electrician shop, we had heating and air conditioning shop, we had motor shop, you know, and we had secretarial programs for all of our high school level students to take. Those are all gone. There's been this huge press to go to college, to go to universities, and you and I both know that not everybody is cut out for that environment. They're just not.
Well, no, and we've talked about this before, and it is my second passion, along with schools not educating you to the job you are actually going to do and what an employer actually needs instead of your theory about it. The other thing is the trades, that our kids need to be going into the trades, because we've had this conversation many times, and I'm a full believer. You always need plumbers. You always need builders. You always need construction workers. You always need electricians. These are things that we have to have because they run our country.
And those are great paying jobs, because your average plumber, your average electrician can make over $100,000 a year right out with a good marketing plan, but right out of trade school. I mean, what job can you get in college other than maybe medical school or some of these other ones where you can start out with a job that pays $100,000 a year?
Well, and without having a degree, if you are proficient in construction, or, of course, you're going to have training in these things, construction or electrician or that type of thing. If you're in the state of New York and you're a qualified carpenter, you can get up to $150,000 a year right off the bat. That is your starting wage.
It's incredible.
Right. If you were in the Carpenters Union, you can get up to $150,000 a year. If you are in no union and you're on your own, you can get $100,000 a year. Our kids who are not that they're not qualified to go to college, but that don't have their heart there, that more like to work with their hands or fix things, there is money to be had out there, and we need those people desperately.
And, you know, I want to piggyback on a couple of things that you said, having worked in universities, you know, part-time for most of my adult life. I absolutely agree with you that there is far too much theory out there. You know, I'm okay with theory for the first year while you're taking your general education classes, but after that, you got to have practical training, practical education, and hands-on training. Now, I went to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, which was a polytechnic university in California, and our motto at that time when I was going through was learn by doing. And everybody, it's the only state university other than Cal Poly Pomona, which we're pretty close to here, are the only two universities in the state of California, state universities that required a practical senior project before you could graduate. And I remember that our architecture students, because we had the third best architecture school in the world, they actually had to build a house.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
They had to build a house, and we put them out in Poly Canyon. All these fantastic houses, you know, solar houses, all these just phenomenal new design houses that these college kids had built. Not adults, college kids. But we have right now a skill deficit in the United States.
Right, and our vocational schools need to be full of students right now because we need them. There's jobs for them, and they need to understand how much money they can make. A good friend of ours has a daughter who took auto shop, and she went to
Gary and Gina, yeah.
She went to vocational training to be an auto mechanic, and she makes good money, and she's just buying her first house after a very short time. You need to do something that really, you know, resonates with what you want to do in life, and kind of not always go where your folks want you to go,
right,
but go where your heart tells you to go.
You know, I took a different, you know, path in my career. My dad was a veterinarian, and I didn't go into veterinary medicine. I ended up in law enforcement, and I was quite pleased what's happened as a result. But it's a constant building. Now, you know, right now, sweetheart, our economic forecast is that We are at the lowest unemployment rate in 45 years. And manufacturing is up, building is up, and the trades are going to be way up.
Yes.
And that means you have got to develop some skills so you don't have that skill deficit. Because I'll tell you what, if you have a skill deficit, you're going to have an economic deficit.
Right, and people just need to go, this is the time, like we've talked about before, to go out and get that training, because companies are offering it right now, where in the past, you'd have to go get your own. Now they're offering training. They need employees, so they are willing to spend that money, put you through school, or give you the vocational training that you need to help them. So this is the time to do it. And the other thing that we have going on in the country right now, kind of the opposite of what the socialism is saying, is President Trump is doing more to kind of free up our healthcare system. And he just came out with some new affordable healthcare that's short-term healthcare, so that you don't have to, if you can't be on the Obamacare because it's too expensive and it's too restrictive for you. He's bringing out some new affordable health insurance programs that are kind of 12 to 36 month programs where you can get what you need. And each step that he takes in helping us with health care is just, it's going to continue to open up more avenues for people in this country, because we were really oppressed as businesses by the Obamacare.
Oh, it hurt tremendously. And you and I have had several conversations about how much it was hurting, business, not only your business that took a hit, but all these other businesses are out there, and also how unfair the Obama plan was, because there was a lot of people that were politically allowed to opt out when other people, other business were taking big hits.
Yeah. Well, 52% of the counties in America, Ron, have only one health care plan available under Obamacare now. And that's just no choice for any of us. And I've been very frustrated with it, as have my employees. And now we are continuing to get more options. And hopefully pretty soon, if Congress ever gets off their duff, they can eliminate Obamacare, give us, where we can do commerce across state lines for our health care and get the prices down and get what we receive up for our employees and get those payments down, and just it and then more people will want to be doctors. This is just a whole big medical mess.
And
country.
We shouldn't have this medical mess, and I'm going to be skeptical, and I'm going to take Congress to task, because have you always noticed that they have their own separate plans for everything they do? Okay, they don't have to contribute to Social Security. They have their own special federal retirement system that we can't contribute to. They have their own medical plan that we can't contribute to. We can't belong to. They are the rich elitists that could care less, both parties could care less about where the average American taxpayer, flyover citizen, what we need in order to make our lives better, to enhance our lives.
Well, I totally agree with that, and I'll take it one step further, that I do not think that Senate and Congress should have the right to set their own salaries, give themselves raises, give themselves health care plans, give themselves pensions, or any of those things. I think that we as Americans should have to vote on whether they deserve those perks for their job, because I wouldn't give somebody a raise, and neither would you, unless they deserved it. And they can give themselves a raise. I want to be able to have a say in if they get a raise. And if they're doing a great job for the American people, let's give them a raise. But if they're doing a really crummy job, as they are now, let's not give them a raise. In fact, let's give them a
deduction.
Deduction. Right?
You know what? I'm going to take that a step farther. I think that we should, through the initiative process, I think that we should vote to demand and require that all federal politicians have the same plan that the United States citizen has.
Yeah, that
okay?
They offer
nothing
for the United
separate.
States.
Separate. Yep. And you watch, if we were able to do that, you watch how fast this would change. I guarantee you it would change in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, honey, speaking of the need for trade schools, we actually have a brand new upstart company, ETC Forensics, education, training, and certification. And our program is going to serve many different communities, the law enforcement, the forensic, the school, education community, social services, medical, and legal, and even perhaps some people in the military. So these are people coming out of high school, or maybe even have a little bit of college, or maybe even a graduate, or a military professional that leaves the military and they're looking for something new to do. And forensics is absolutely a growing need.
Oh, it absolutely is. And it also allows police officers who have some years of experience on the job to get additional training and become police practices experts.
That's exactly right. So the forensic community is a growing community that requires skill sets. And it's really funny because CSI isn't really like you see, you know, CSI Las Vegas or Miami Beach. I mean, I am CSI. I live CSI. But what is interesting is that we always have a need for more crime scene and forensic technicians. And this is a spot for a kid that's in high school or maybe in college, and they might see themselves as a little bit geeky, but they've got great skills. They've got, you know, social media skills. They've got computer skills, you know, good skills like that, and they don't know what they can do or where they can go. This is a program where they can absolutely take ETC forensic classes, they can get certified, and they can get picked up by a law enforcement agency to become a CSI tech. And for educators, we have a program, brand new program, certified in school safety, and it's not a long program, and they can come out with a certificate where they can even enhance what they're doing for their career.
Absolutely. And we will have more news on that
shortly. Hey, after that conversation, I'm a little bit thirsty. How about we fill her up and we continue?
Okay.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hey, now that we're back after having quenched our thirsts, I want to talk about the dire situation that we are experiencing in California right now with our Northern California fires.
It's absolutely on fire in much of Northern California.
And the fire, which is right now, there's several fires going on, but I think the most dangerous one is the Carr Fire, with two R's, up in Northern California around Redding. And so far, that fire is only 30% contained, is burned over 100,000 acres. I think it's like 130,000 acres, but it has burned down about 10,000 houses and displaced tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, that's huge. And, you know, this is a really ongoing problem for California. Every year they have these fires. And are terrible, like this one.
And last year's Napa fire,
yes,
I think it took out about 5,000 houses last year. And I think they lost something like over 30 people in the Napa fires and went right through the town of Santa Rosa. And I'm telling you, this fire right now, we've already had, you know, 6 civilian deaths. And we've had 5 firefighters that have perished in these flames. I mean, what a tremendous sacrifice our men and women in the fire service do every single day.
Oh, there's story after story of heartwarming things that they're doing, from the photo of the firefighter with the little baby deer arms, and the deer is licking his face, and, you know, he saved that deer. Nobody knows what happened to mama, But, you know, just there was puppies. I mean, there's puppies, there's deers, there's people, there's
horses, there's livestock, yeah, there's everything.
They're just out there doing everything
that they can to save them. And, you know, I told you before, my good friend Joe McCarthy and his wife Charlotte, they lost their house. They've been living up in Redding for well over 30 years in retirement, and their whole house burned to the ground. You know, I was talking with Joe this morning and offering him, you know, part of our place in Texas. And I said, how are you doing? And he says, you know, one of my neighbors who's house didn't burn down has got a granny unit, and we're going to be able to live there.
Oh, wow.
While our house gets rebuilt.
Oh, wow.
They haven't yet opened up his neighborhood because obviously it's still pretty dangerous up there. But he said that they plan on opening up the neighborhood to civilian traffic so the poor victims of the fire can come out and, you know, assess their property with the insurance adjusters. And I said to Joe, I said, you know, come on out and visit us. We've got an extra place to stay for you if you just get, you know, tired or being depressed of being around there. Because that is depressing. I mean, we've been in fire areas where, you know, like up in Lake Arrowhead when we used to live up there, and a lot of our neighbors lost homes very close to us. And you look out there and you see all that burnt area and those burnt houses, and that's depressing to look at that every single day.
Oh, it is. And it definitely takes some time to get everything cleaned up and rebuilt. So, yeah, it can be a long haul for people.
And, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to all of our first responders up there and to the victims up in Redding. And it's just word of the wise with everybody else in California to clear the brush around their properties, huh? Just, you know, we call it defensive. I think it's called defensive safety, where if you've got a house and you've got tall weeds and stuff, I know we do it at our place, right? We cut out at least 100 yards from our ranch around our house.
Yeah, but if you get in these areas with, you know, people want to live in beautiful areas where there's lots of trees and there's, you know, it's not just the brush, but what happens is those fires make their own weather and their own firestorms within the fire, and that they're so fast, you can't get away.
You know, that's a great point, and something that we learned up in Lake Arrowhead, the point about the fire makes its own weather.
Right.
And that's exactly what the firefighters are reporting up in the Carr fire, where they saw winds. By the way, it was calm all around the fire, but within the firestorm, winds of over 70 miles an hour that knocked roofs off of houses.
Yeah, they make tornadoes of fire, and then the fire leaps from treetop to treetop.
Exactly.
So you can have no brush on the ground, but if there's trees where you live.
And those embers, right,
yeah,
floating around.
Embers, yeah, it's very scary.
I'll tell you one thing that we learned, huh? And that is when you have a fire in their area and you get the first evacuation notice, don't fool around. Get your stuff packed. You should already have a bug-out bag if you live in those fire-threatened areas, and you need to get your stuff out of there and not fool around, because the fire can go through there in a heartbeat and can absolutely take you out.
Well, and what I always did was when I saw smoke from the places that we live, because we generally do live in fire areas.
And you got to have situational awareness.
When I see smoke, I don't wait for somebody to tell me to evacuate.
Right.
I get my things ready, and I kind of make my own judgment. I can either wait for somebody to tell me, but if I feel threatened or if I feel something, you know, the weather or the winds are up, I'm going anyway.
And you never know when it's going to happen, honey. You remember when we lived in California, we had our house up in Lake Arrowhead and we had our ranch in Temecula, and you evacuated. We had to evacuate both houses on the same day, and they were 2 hours away from each other.
And there was no we about it, Ron.
No, I was gone.
You were out of town.
We just cast, you know, we just cast, what do you call it? Cast our faith to our Lake Arrowhead house and hoped it survived. And then you and neighbors, God bless them, helped you evacuate from Temecula, because I don't remember where I was, but I wasn't even in the state.
No, and I was very blessed that family and friends showed up on the doorstep and said, we're here to help. And I didn't ask anybody for help, because that's kind of how I am. But there they were, and they absolutely got out far more than I could have ever gotten out.
And that fire, as I recall, from Lake Arrowhead, because we went up and looked at it, it stopped just a quarter mile from our cabin up there. But in Lake Arrowhead, I'm sorry, in Lake Arrowhead, but in Temecula, it was just like 400 yards away.
Right.
And thank God for air tankers and spot crews, right?
Right. So I usually do good news about now, and I'm not going to do so much good news today because I think it was that kind of strange kind of day where we had lots of bad behavior. But one of the things that I did read about from the Daily Caller, which I enjoy reading, is they have a fact check section. So, you know, you hear all this stuff on the news, and they're going to check and see if what is put out is right or not right.
Because some of that stuff, a lot of that stuff that comes out from politicians and pundits happens to get Pinocchio Awards.
Yeah. Well, so here's my first fact check. I'll ask you the questions, okay?
All right, go ahead. Okay. I love a test.
So, Trump says 3.5 million people have been lifted off food stamps. True or false?
Well, you know, I think that would be true, and one of the reasons that I would guess to that is I kind of cheated before because I read the economic index and the surveys, and one of the things that I read was that under this administration, the number of people living below the poverty line has dropped by 2.5 million people since Trump came into office. So that sounds about true to me.
And that is true. Ding, ding. Okay, so with under Obama, there was 43.2 million people on food stamps. That's a whole lot of people. And now there's 39.6 million. So that verdict is true.
Ding, ding.
Okay, question number two. Democratic Senator Kamala Harris, your favorite, she says that over 11 million Americans spend more than half of what they make on rent.
Well, I think it would depend on where they live. I know in California, especially in the San Francisco Bay Area, or down in San Diego, or in Orange County, or Los Angeles, that probably would be true, but I don't know about throughout the United States.
Well, it's just 11 million people throughout the United States. So the result of that question is that it's really unsubstantiated. What she did is she took figures from the census that said that people spend half of their income, but that also included things like their utilities and water and so forth. So it really is not that they spend half on rent. That it could be true if you include all of the expenses.
So it's really circumstantial and dependent demographically on where the people are in the United States, Linda?
No, it's just that people will spend half of their money on rent, but it includes all of the utilities. She specifically carved out utilities and said that was additional, and that part is wrong.
Okay.
So that's a situation where we have Kamala Harris manipulating the actual facts and numbers to make it sound like what she wants it to sound like.
Ah, typical politician.
Yep. Okay, question number three. President Trump claims the GDP never hit 3% under Obama.
I think that's true because I can remember some pretty poor GDPs under the Obama administration.
Well, that is true. And although he had some quarters where it hit 3%, he never had the annual 3% GDP that Trump has.
You know, and I believe that that was because of spikes in certain industries at certain times. So I would absolutely agree with that. You can't claim a consistent upward movement of GDP under that Obama administration because it didn't happen.
Yeah, he hit 2.9% one time. Okay, fact check. Did President Obama know about Russian meddling and do nothing?
Oh, I think he absolutely knew about Russian meddling and did nothing. I think there's a lot of documentation of that now.
Well, that is absolutely true. And in fact, in August 2016, the CIA received and presented Obama with intelligence about such meddling in all different ways. And he also had information way back in September of 2015. So without making a big long story longer, that is true.
Well, let me speculate just a second on why I would think that something like that happened. Any type of information he would have had on the Russians would have been to favor Hillary Clinton, who he supported for the presidency. So I don't think he would want to do anything about that. Am I on the right track there?
Well, sure. And in April of 2016, the DNC IT staff saw the
evidence of meddling and hacking.
And hacking, right. And also the CIA in August briefed Obama personally. So for them to say that they knew nothing about it, and then now we have this huge thing about Trump being involved, this is ridiculous because the people that were involved were not President Trump. It was the entire Obama administration.
Well, you know what? Let me piggyback on that, because this is one of the things that frosts my socks about this whole Mueller investigation, if I can just walk us down that road for a second, and just the disparity of how things are handled with Mueller as the so-called independent investigator, and with President Trump and President Trump's people, as opposed to Hillary Clinton and the DNC and Podesta and all of these people. You know what? Fair is fair, and there is nothing, as a law enforcement professional, retired, and as a forensic expert, that I see that is any way, shape, or form fair in the way this investigation has been conducted. I mean, right now, and the way, I don't see any difference in the way it'll be conducted in the future. I see so much implicit bias, so much confirmation bias, so much disparity of, you know, lack of incriminating information or findings against Hillary Clinton, and an overriding desire to find things that are inculpatory or incriminating about Trump, and completely ignoring exculpatory information. So far, none of these people that they've arrested, that they've indicted, have any objective factual ties to Donald Trump and collusion with the Russians.
Well, and because, guess why? Because there is none. But there absolutely was collusion on the part of the Democrats with the Steele dossier, and there was collusion in the FBI, and all of the people that could be accused of collusion are given a free pass.
Oh, they're given amnesty.
They're all given immunity for.
Thank you. Not amnesty. That means they've already been convicted. let's give them immunity.
Yeah, they're given immunity. So I don't understand why you arrest somebody, or not arrest them, but you prosecute them, and then you give everybody else who has the same crime but is on the other side of the aisle immunity. This is just so upsetting, and it's a whole conversation we could have for hours, Ron, and I don't think I have the energy left to do that, but this is so wrong. But basically, the fact check says that, of course, Obama knew all of this ahead of time and chose to do nothing.
Can I say something just succinctly about that? Let's use some common sense here, sweetheart. Look at all this stuff that is happening, and what of any of these things take your wildest accusations of collusion or whatever, what of any of these things that have happened so far affects you and me as Americans and as voters and taxpayers? Just name one thing. I can't name a damn thing.
Well, the only way that it affects us right now is that it's preventing our whole government system is at a standstill over this.
And that's how it affects all of us. And you know
what?
You're actually right about that. Let me tell you when it would affect us. If they keep pushing this thing and keep pushing it and pushing it when there is nothing there, it could actually cause the economy to take a downturn, because the stock market, as you and I know, is completely speculative. As a matter of fact, a lot of the stock market is run by algorithms and artificial intelligence. So they better have something, and if they don't have something, Mr. Mueller, I would suggest you knock it off.
Well,
and let's move forward again.
And let's be even, Stephen, on both sides. And that's all the American people want. I think that the American people are just like us, Ron. We are all sick to death of this investigation. We think it's bogus. And I just speak as what I hear in the media and what I see. I see everything the same millions of American people see, right? And it just seems pretty bogus to me. So I want to tell you one more little story about a little child in New York.
Okay.
Because we're done with our fact checking.
All right.
But
how did I do?
you actually did really well.
Because I have such test anxiety.
you did very well. Well, you know, we've had these stories a number of times, which is so interesting. So we have another little girl, 7 years old, who was put out of business in her lemonade stand in New York.
Bah humbug.
I know. And this is little Brendan Mulvaney, and he was selling lemonade, you know, outside of his home. And the thing is that the New York Health Department turned up and said, oh, the family doesn't have a permit, so you can't have this lemonade stand. But the truth is that the health department in New York does not even control that for lemonade stands.
Oh, out of their jurisdiction.
Yeah, they're
move
out
on.
Of their jurisdiction.
Move on, officer.
So they've gone back and forth. Do we require a permit? Do we not require a permit? And the thing that's interesting about this is you have this little child who's charging 75 cents for a lemonade, right? But the county fair was right nearby that was charging $7 for a lemonade.
Oh, my gosh.
And the vendors at the county fair are the ones who complained that...
Oh, that's not nice.
...that their business was being hurt. I mean, seriously.
Come on.
I know.
It's just a kid. You know what? Compare and contrast that with what we spoke about just the other day about, was it the city of Minneapolis that actually took that 13-year-old black kid that had a lemonade stand, and instead of closing him down...
Hot dog stand,
I think. It was a hot dog stand, that's right. And instead of closing him down, what did they do? They taught him, right? They chipped in to buy him his permit, taught him how to prepare food, and the kid's going gangbusters now.
Well, now he's getting a permit, but doesn't even know that he really needs a permit, but it's only $30 a year. And it's interesting that Governor Cuomo's office had no comment.
No, go figure.
You know, the last thing that I want to mention before we hit the road, Ron, is there's this new, it's a cereal, kind of a candy, kind of a cereal that is called Dragon's Breath. And it's got liquid nitrogen that's poured over it so that when you eat it, it allows you to blow smoke out of your nose and your mouth.
That's, oh, really?
Yeah, that's kind of why it's called Dragon's Breath. Well, it's nitrogen infused. But the thing is that this particular food product has been a problem, and people need to understand that if you have asthma or you have a child that has asthma and you eat this, that child can have a very, very severe, even fatal asthma attack.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's,
well, let's make sure that all the people that we know that have kids are going to know about that.
Yeah, and it also, there's actually even been a little girl that was burned by this treat. I don't know how that happened exactly, but it's very fast acting. It's not something that somebody with breathing problems cannot take. So I want to say that if you see the Dragon's Breath, honestly, I'd be staying away from it for anybody.
Well, I'm surprised the FDA even approved it, but, you know, that form of taking in something is called insufflation, right? So you're sucking it up into your respiratory system, and of course it's going to be instantaneous. That is the quickest way to be under the influence of anything.
Yeah, so Dragon's Breath, not so good for you.
Well, you know what? We've got a little bit of a ride to get back to the house, right, that we're staying at. So you ready to pack it up?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go.